To begin September, we meditated together upon the meaning of Holy Communion, the Lord's Supper, Eucharist, found in remembrance. Do this in remembrance of me. To begin October, we meditated together upon the meaning of the Lord's Supper, Holy Communion, Eucharist, in thanksgiving. The word Eucharist means thanksgiving. Today we meditate together to complete the triad upon the meaning of the Lord's Supper, Holy Communion, Eucharist, in presence, in which we trust, real presence, wherever two or three are gathered together in my name, there will I be also. We gather too with our differences. A friend has reminded me of a passage not long ago wherein Charlie Brown and Linus are speaking. This conversation may have occurred following Halloween and prior to Christmas, because Linus was lamenting the non-appearance of the great pumpkin, to which Charlie Brown replied, "Linus, the great pumpkin is not real," which was devastating to his friend. And a frame and a sigh and a starry night, to which later Linus retorts, "Well, he may not be, but he's a lot more real than that heavy-set, bearded, red-garbed reindeer sleigh fellow you're waiting for at the end of the year," which was devastating to his friend. A frame, a starry night, a sigh, after which Charlie Brown writes, "The world is full of theological differences." As if we weren't keenly enough aware of the differences among and between us in this age, our texts today set as a background to a great announcement about presence, some honest reflection and record of difference. 2 Thessalonians, written by a student of the Apostle Paul some 50 years after Paul's martyrdom, records a dispute in the church about whether or not the Lord's Day had already come. He wouldn't bring it up if someone weren't arguing so. And so this student, writing pseudonymously, goes and finds treasures from his heritage about a man of lawlessness and about a rebellion. You can tell, even in the hearing and translation, that he's not quite comfortable using this ancient language, but he has a point to make. It's the same point that 50 years then later, 2 Peter will make in the middle of the second century, which is, the day of the Lord comes, but the Lord's days are not exactly our days, and the days of the Lord are not exactly quite the same length as our days, and we shall need to wait in confidence. He places this conflict as a background against a great and a large pronouncement for which we shall listen in just a moment. Likewise, in Luke, the 20th chapter, we have returned to common ground. The Lucan portion of Luke's gospel has ended in chapter 19. You know those chapters 9 to 19 in which Luke gives all of his own material. And we've returned to a familiar account of Levirate marriage found in Mark and in Matthew, the account of the dispute between the Pharisees, who do not believe in the resurrection, and those who, the Pharisees who do believe in the resurrection, and those who do not believe in the resurrection, those who are sad, you see, the sad you sees. They are arguing about the place of a woman married seven times. And Luke records this in a very different way from his source in Mark. In Mark, Jesus is harsh. In Mark, Jesus rebukes. In Mark, Jesus says, "You know not neither the power of God nor the truth of the Scriptures," and concludes his dialogue with this tart sentence, "You are wrong." But here in Luke, the dialogue is Socratic, the love is Platonic, the tone is ironic. It's like a course at the end of the term when the evaluations are all fives out of five. Oh, so sweet. "Teacher, you have spoken well." It is smooth. it is some 30 years after Mark, which is some 40 years itself after the cross and resurrection. And yet here too, there is difference. There is contention about the meaning of resurrection. Set as a backdrop for a great high acclamation for which we will listen, good news, in just a moment. But you know, to follow these texts and come to the table, we need to have candor. We need to be honest with ourselves. We too know about difference. We know that things don't always work out, that not all relationships succeed, that some relationships end, and that some end badly. That's why they end. And we recognize our differences, some social, some cultural, some political, those deepest and most lasting, broadly speaking, most probably they religious themselves. We recognize difference even as these writers did, acknowledging too something else on the far side of difference. And that is that, as you know, the denouement of one friendship, friendship is holy, allows for the possibility of the birth of something new and something other, perhaps something more lasting. The conclusion of one partnership of whatever sort allows the birth of something new, something even more lasting. In communities of faith as well, we look for hunger for need and deserve, you need and deserve, a church family to love and a church home to enjoy. Community is the native soil of the human spirit. How I wish I had written that sentence. I didn't. That's Howard Thurman. Community is the native soil of the human spirit. On the far side of these and other differences, these strange ancient apocalyptic debates, and our own more current existential experience, we have and we acclaim the possibility of presence. The psalmist writes, "In thy presence there is fullness of joy." Our texts speak of human beings, she and he, you and him, as if in another mode we might be angelic. It reminds me of C.S. Lewis, who once wrote, following his own struggle to conversion, that he said, once you relate to another human being, you might keep in mind that in another mode, that woman or man might become a being whom you would be sorely tempted to worship, an angelic being. It makes us careful, doesn't it? It makes us cautious. It may even make us a little bit more humble, a little bit more kind. Presence, not just remembrance, not just thanksgiving, but real presence. This past week, Elie Wiesel remembered a young rabbi, precocious, who was asked by a veteran, "I will give you a gold coin if you will tell me where God is." To which the young man replied, "I will give you 5 if you will tell me where he is not." Presence, real presence. In thy presence there is fullness of joy. Those listening on the radio may want to imagine where we are. Before me is a loving, giving, singing congregation. To left and right are beautiful conic stained glass windows, which recount the story and the history of the teaching of the church. Beside me is the table, the altar spread. All is ready for all who are able and willing to come. The choir surrounding us, an angelic chorus to lift our hearts and spirits. And you, listening at the kitchen table, in the den, driving that car, are part of our radio congregation, which is an oxymoron, actually. A congregation that is by radio is an ungathered congregation. Except in this moment especially, it reminds us of presence. You are here. Presence that has no boundary, no limit, no zip code. You are present with us, and we, by grace, with you. No, we cannot give you today a novel theology of real presence, so dear to John Wesley's heart, this teaching, but with him we may simply practice such presence and bear witness. Jan and I began our experience together of Eucharistic presence under the stentorian voice of William Sloan Coffin at Riverside Church. He tried come Communion Sunday to fit his ample Presbyterian self into a straitened Baptist liturgy. I hear his voice still. There's more mercy in God than there is sin in us. I hear his voice still. Guilt is the last hiding place of pride. I hear his voice still. I'm not okay, and you're not okay, but that's okay. I hear his voice still. The separation of church and state does not mean the separation of a Christian from her politics. And the ringing of that great tower and its bells, I hear it still. Real presence, 1977. We went north to Ithaca, where, because I didn't have ordination, an elderly man who had walked across Africa, Royce Myers, in his youth, administered the communion. He had served that church in the 1920s. He followed John R. Mott, and he knew Pearl Buck, who lived in the parsonage with her husband later in that decade. I can see his shoe as with humility he offered us cup and bread, real presence. We went north just an hour south of Montreal to there on the banks of the St. Lawrence River one Maundy Thursday to celebrate communion. In the town Laura Ingalls Wilder describes in her book, Farmer Boy. Except that night the furnace gave way, and it's cold in March in North Franklin County, so we found ourselves all 75 in the parsonage itself. Some had been in the barn, some had been at the workplace, some had been at school, and together we were for bread and cup on the stairs at the table around the piano. Real presence. One Christmas Eve in the Syracuse University neighborhood in the 1990s, it was communion at midnight. We had 8 new international students just struggling with the vagaries of the English language, holding candles as the wax dripped, trying to figure out which side was up in the hymnal, celebrating together with us. As the sermon mentioned, Ernie Davis, real presence. And then in the city of Rochester, under a pulpit like Coffin's itself, 15 feet above contradiction, as we like to say, on a moment unexpected, at a service of communion at the rail, a young woman whom we hadn't seen in several decades came forward with face full of tears and smile both. In the setting of those who were buried there, those about whom Coffin taught us, about Douglas and Anthony and Katie and Rauschenbusch, real presence. And today, Marsh Chapel, 2010, we might say in the spirit of presence, alongside James Bashford, alongside Daniel Marsh, alongside Earl Marlott, with you. With him. Presence, presence, presence. Spirit consoling, let us find thy hand when sorrows leave us blind. In the gray valley, let us hear thy silent voice. Lo, I am near.